Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kresge. Can anybody stop her? That's the title of a program at the library tonight, and that's the question on the table here this morning. Can anybody stop Hillary Clinton from winning the White House in 2016? Pollster John Zogby tested that question recently, and the answer, at least according to Zogby right now, is no, nobody can stop her. That online survey showed Clinton handily defeating Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, or Rand Paul. We'll kick around that question and a whole bunch more about the midterm election politics of 2014. With us this morning are two journalists who will lead the conversation tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library downtown at 14 West 10th Street. They are Carl Cannon. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics. And Carl, it's always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Thank you, Steve.
Kansas City's own David Vondrely is also here. He's an editor-at-large for Time magazine. David, how are you?
Great, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, is there even a conversation to have here, Carl? I mean, Hillary Clinton will be the Democratic nominee for president. She'll win the race in November. The country is poised to elect the first woman president. Let's go home. Is it really going to be all that simple?
Well, yeah, it is. So let's just spend the remainder of the hour fundraising. Yeah.
Not a bad idea. Is it that simple?
Well, she's going to be the nominee.
She's going to be the nominee.
And, you know, none of these – I like to tell people Cannon's first law of politics, and I never remember the second, is that you can't beat somebody with nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans thought for a while they had somebody in Chris Christie. They're not sure they still do. They have somebody waiting in the wings in the person of Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
And I don't think – I mean, even Barbara Bush didn't want a Clinton-Bush rematch, but that's what we may get.
Yeah. David, what do you think? How's it look to you right now?
I'd say right now it looks like Hillary Clinton is going to be president, but that, judging from my track record, 2 years out from elections, that means she will not be president. We'd have President Giuliani. We'd have President Tim Pawlenty, I think I picked one time.
Yeah, I've got a couple of those myself, President Glenn and President Babbitt.
Yeah, exactly. So take it with a grain of salt, but she is – she left – the way she left the race in 2009, I feel she collected a ticket, golden ticket.
An IOU in a sense.
A lot of women felt that it was their moment, and out of nowhere came this junior senator from Illinois who sort of captured the imagination of a lot of the country, a lot of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And instead of our first – female president, we got our first African-American president. But that desire to make that piece of history, if anything, it's become more intense over the past 6 years. And everything Hillary Clinton has done has only improved her claim on that ticket.
You know, Carl, but David just alluded to a couple of things. One was President Bruce Babbitt. You know, the idea that things change, and things change a lot in American politics, maybe even more so today than in the past. And the other thing that strikes me about all of this is there is this phenomenon in American politics where, you know, a candidate who has not formally announced, you know, flirts with the race, and then the moment he or she formally announces, the luster's gone, the zip has vanished, and suddenly that person looks like just another candidate. I mean, what is it about our politics that we tend to flirt with these people and then we walk away once they formally have announced their candidacy?
Well, the phenomenon you're talking about, it was most pronounced in 1980 when Ted Kennedy was beating Jimmy Carter 2-1 in the polls. Then when Ted Kennedy announced, people started doing stories about Chappaquiddick. Started doing interviews with Ted Kennedy, who couldn't really tell you why he wanted to be president.
Yeah.
And the thing – and people's – Democrats split. The organization, a lot of them said, you know, this guy's our president. And so you had a very divided party, and Jimmy Carter ended up winning that nomination. So what you're talking about is true. And even last time, Rick Perry was the great sort of hope for the Republicans till he announced, and then suddenly he didn't wear well. But I David and I both agree on this, though, that Hillary Clinton's maybe a different phenomenon. This thing's been building not for just for 4 years. It's been building for 150 years. You know, the early suffragists were abolitionists. And after the Civil War, when the blacks got the vote, but women didn't get the vote. Mm-hmm. And the women said, mm-hmm. collectively in this country, are you kidding me? Slaves, freed slaves, but if they're men, they still don't want us to vote. What is it about men? And man, they have waited and waited and waited. And a lot of them didn't think they should have to wait in 2008. I'm talking about Democratic women and independent women in this country.
Yeah.
And I just think that this thing is so – I don't mean to sound like a Marxist determinist, but there's historical forces here that are bigger even than Bill and Hillary Clinton's ambitions, if you can imagine.
No, wait. Not that big.
But David, even to run with Carl's point for a moment, he mentioned Ted Kennedy and he announces and all this stuff comes back to haunt him like Chappaquiddick. Well, Hillary Clinton has a few things in her closet, too. One is called Benghazi. Another is called Whitewater. And, you know, then Monica Lewinsky and when she knew what with all of that, as if that really matters that much, I grant you. But there are things there to be looked at and considered.
Sure,
right?
Absolutely. And they will get looked at and considered, and she'll have to have answers for them. And you know, there are people in her circle who don't want her to run. She's going to be 70 years old. So she's hearing all of this. She's going to be thinking it through. It's hard for me to picture both what I know of her and what I'm seeing in terms of the shadow campaign that's being set up. Very hard for me to imagine she'd decide not to do it, but it's possible. But on the other side, there is, I think, an apt 1980 parallel here, but it ain't Ted Kennedy and it ain't Jimmy Carter. It's Ronald Reagan. Hmm. You know, Reagan left the 1976 convention.
Here in Kansas City.
Yes, as the heir apparent and had that head of steam and was not going to be denied the 1980 nomination. And that's the parallel I see in the Clinton campaign.
I'm Steve Kraske. We're visiting this morning with two great political reporters, Carl Cannon. He's a Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics and Kansas City's own David Von Draley, who's an editor at large for Time Magazine. The two of them speak at 6:30 this evening about whether Hillary Clinton is all but destined to become the next president of the United States. They'll be at the downtown Kansas City Public Library, 14 West 10th Street. Go to kclibrary.org to grab a seat. David, you know, in my mind, the tougher nut to crack for this country was electing an African-American president as opposed to a woman president. I just thought the racial barrier was, you know, a tougher nut to crack for the country than the gender challenge. What do you think about that?
I agree completely. And the fact that it happened first, I think, surprised a lot of us. And what it means to me about the next election is that getting over the gender hurdle is going to be very small in people's minds. But women are going to want to accomplish it, and a lot of men as well. But there's more ground had been – I've always felt that the Thatcher prime ministership in England, her enormous place on the world stage, her partnership with President Reagan, that as much as anything really paved the way, and that it's been simply a matter of time in the United States since then. And if you look since that, we've had women as, you know, Oprah's the biggest earner on TV, and you have women at the heads of major Fortune 100 companies, all the other barriers, they're college presidents, they're entrepreneurs, they're inventors, they're scientists.
Yeah.
It's just this one additional step to take.
Carl, you buy that?
Well, yeah. And I think I wrote a piece in, I looked at 15 years ago, 1999. And
were you right about something?
For National Journal. Well,
you get one right?
I used Elizabeth Dole to write about the idea of a woman president and got deep into the polling and called the people at Gallup, you know, who were doing it. Yeah. I think it was Andy then, and Andy Kohut. And they'd been asked – Gallup has been asking these questions, very similar questions since the 30s. So it's pretty good social science. Are you ready for – would you vote for an Italian, a Jewish, black woman president and for president? And, they, you know, there's always – people don't – you tend to want to tell pollsters that they're bigots. So they have some devices they use, like they ask, okay, you would, but would your neighbor? Mm-hmm. Would your neighbor vote for a woman? And there's mm-hmm. always some slippage. But it was pretty clear, and this is 15 years ago, that the country, 92% of the people were willing to vote for a woman for president. Mm-hmm. So that thing is that's laid to rest. And that has been laid to rest for a while. And the country was ready for a woman president before it was ready for an African-American president. It didn't get one, but it could have. And now what you have, the polling now is, I mean, this clearly helps her. It helped Obama. And people, if you say that, people sometimes say, oh, but there's still racists in the country. Sure, there are. But net votes, more people voted for Barack Obama because he was African-American than voted against him because that's he was African-American. That's pretty clear. And Obama doesn't contest that. And his people will tell you this. With Hillary Clinton, it's a whole nother level. Gallup did a recent poll. Now the polling about women presidents, not academic. It's not maybe Elizabeth Dole run. It's when people talk about women president, they think of Hillary Rodham Clinton. And in the latest poll, Gallup found 16% of the people asked for her greatest strength, said that she'd be the first woman president. Hmm. So this is now an overt – this is a reason to vote for her that probably – and there's other reasons to vote for her. She's good. She's well qualified. She's if she were the nominee, David and I think she's going to be the nominee, she would be the standard bearer of a party that's going to get 40% of the vote no matter who they nominate.
Mm-hmm.
And then – so then you're adding to – on top of that tremendous fundraising ability – 100% name recognition, and the idea that this is, as David said, really the sort of the last barrier to fall.
Yeah. Well, speaking of last barriers, the last great political convention arguably was the 76 convention here in Kansas City. The convention nominated Gerald Ford over Ronald Reagan in a hotly, intensely contested, battle between the two of them. You know, was that, Carl, the last great convention? And what are the prospects for Kansas City, in your view, getting this convention compared to, say, a Denver or a Dallas or a Vegas, that kind of thing?
Well, it was a great convention, no question. And was it the last great convention? The Democrats were in Madison Square Garden in 1980 when Ted Kennedy gave his great speech. I think they'd maybe pick a quarrel with us.
That was a great speech.
But the 76 convention, you didn't know who was going to be the nominee coming out of it. And there's several things in hindsight that we remember. One of them is the bitterness between the Ford and Reagan camps. But Ford really wanting to win, and he ended up not winning, but he sent for Reagan to give a speech at the unannounced. I mean, Reagan didn't know it was going to happen. And Reagan came down and gave a speech that was stunningly good. Hmm. No speechwriter wrote it. He holds up all these years later. And he's talked about nuclear proliferation. He talked about the future. He talked about disarmament. It was an amazing speech. And from that moment forward, as Dave pointed out, he was the president in waiting whether Ford won or lost. And I interviewed Jerry Ford before he died. I interviewed him several times. But the last time I brought up the Reagan thing, we were talking about Kansas City. And remember in 1980 in Detroit, there was the dream ticket. It was going to be Ford, Reagan. And then 4 years later, Ford take the number two spot? And I asked him about this. And he rehashed, what he'd said before. But then – and just to be polite, I said, well, if you had taken it, it would have been a hell of a ticket. And Ford said to me, Carl, it took me a long time to admit this, even to myself. But the truth of it is that any ticket with Ronald Reagan on it was a hell of a ticket.
He acknowledged that even though what the tensions between those two men in Kansas City in 1976 at the former Alameda Hotel, at other locations around town, it was an extremely bitter race between those two guys.
It certainly was.
Yeah. David, you reflect back, was 76 the last great convention, or do you go with 1980, or where do you fall down there?
1980 was dramatic because you had all those unhappy Kennedy Democrats, and it was Ted's famous speech that you've referred to was, the dream will never die speech.
Yeah.
But they knew, in fact, the dream was dying that night, that there was not going to be another Kennedy president. So there's drama there, but there wasn't suspense in the way there was in Kansas City in 76, where it really was a question of who was going to be the nominee. for the Republican Party. And so I give the narrow edge to Kansas City.
We're talking this morning with Carl Cannon of Real Clear Politics and David Von Draley of Time Magazine. We haven't talked yet, gentlemen, about the 2016 Republican field and where that race is likely to go. 2016, obviously a long way to go. But with that caveat, Carl Cannon, Jeb Bush getting a lot of attention these days. How are you seeing that race sort of unfold as you look at it?
Well, it had an inauspicious beginning. The prospective candidate's mother said he shouldn't run, and she said it publicly. So I guess it's all uphill from there.
Yeah. Not a good sign. Not a good sign. How's he looking, Jeb Bush?
Jeb's a competent guy and a decent one, and he had was popular in Florida. I mean, there's no reason he shouldn't run. We were talking earlier about Ted Kennedy. There was a great line used in a debate against Teddy when he first started out. You know, if your name was Edward Moore, that was his middle name, nobody would take you seriously. Jeb's got the opposite problem. If his name was, Jeb, Stewart, people, well, maybe not that name, but
Jeb Ellis would be an incredible candidate. Popular governor of a major state, a leading thinker in the party, what used to be called a great conservative. You know, I mean, what is a conservative? Is it kind of up for grabs in the Republican Party right now?
Yeah.
But Jeb Bush is definitely the leader of a strand of intellectual conservatism in the party and recognized by everyone in that area as one of the leading figures, much more conservative than his brother or his father. And so, I mean, he just stacks up in all these ways, but he's named Bush. And just as Hillary's going to need to deal with Clinton fatigue, there's Bush fatigue out there as well, including among his mother.
Yeah. Bill Kristol, the conservative commentator, just the other day said that Jeb Bush's problem is that he'll not have held public office for a decade by the time 2017 rolls around. That's the year the next president takes the oath of office. He said there's no way Jeb Bush is the GOP nominee, Carl. No way.
He can predict. I mean, I don't know that he's going to be the nominee either, but I would say the fact that he hasn't held office is not a strike against him at a time when your average congressman is polling literally below root canals. That's the Republicans' Congress poll rating right now. So that doesn't hurt him. But I think what Bill's alluding to there is that, you know, maybe time's passed him by. And I hear some of these young voters, they're not as enamored of Hillary Clinton as people in her generation. So I think some of that, the desire for a fresh face, some of that exists in both parties. It does. And that's not – and I don't – so if you want to talk about who would be a fresh face, well, a senator from Florida who was one time Jeb's protege, Marco Rubio. Hmm. He's a fresh face and a pretty compelling guy. I personally think he needs more seasoning. I don't think the lesson of the Obama administration is that voters – I don't think voters are going to think the lesson is that experience is irrelevant. I think it's probably going to be a year where that may help you.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know who's going to be the nominee, but let's go through the rest of them. I mean, who else?
Well, Chris Christie, I was just going to go there next. And Bridgegate, David Von Draley, a lot of folks say he's done. He's toast.
Well, it plays so dramatically into what a lot of us saw as Christie's potential weakness. That's the biggest problem with Bridgegate is that the more you know Chris Christie personally, and I'm set aside how he presents to the voters, which is very attractive. I think you see it in his poll numbers. But the more exposure you have to him as a human being, the less you like him. I think that describes every Republican I've talked to. Chris Christie is not a guy who wins you over. His best moment with you is the first impression, and it goes downhill from there. So I've always thought that was kind of problematic. New Jersey, Atlantic Coast, Mid-Atlantic is not the natural base for a Republican anymore. And so I would say let's look at the Midwest. You've got a number of interesting Midwestern governors, Scott Walker in Wisconsin, John Kasich in Ohio, mm-hmm. the battleground state. Texas is the heart of the Republican Party now. It's a troubled heart, but it mm-hmm. is the heart. I think
Rick Perry might go again.
He's making noise.
He's going to go again. He had a lot of growing to do, we'll see if he's done it. The Texan who I think is going to cause trouble in this race is Ted Cruz, mm-hmm. the new senator, and he is cunning. He is off the chart smart and clearly willing to break any amount of China. I don't picture him winning the nomination, but I think he could stir up a lot of trouble.
Well, neither one of you have mentioned Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, who seems to be moving over towards the center from his sort of right conservative base as a way to make himself more attractive to mainstream Republican voters. Carl, is he on your list?
I was about to mention him. I don't think that's quite the right way to look at Rand Paul. I think he's a classic libertarian. And this tension has existed in the Republican Party since Reagan was there between social conservatives and small government economic conservatives. Reason Magazine, which is a libertarian-leaning publication, had a debate a few years ago in its pages. And the debate was, if you're a libertarian, should you be a Republican or a Democrat? It was a fascinating intellectual conversation. But the truth is, libertarians are neither Republicans nor Democrats. And so I think Rand Paul taps into a strain of Republicanism. But he also taps into, especially among young voters, fear of a lack of privacy, worry of the Edward Snowden faction of the Democratic Party. Rand Paul has a chance to make trouble in the primaries. And he could make trouble in the Democratic primaries because he taps into a strain of American thinking, which is get the mm-hmm. Don't tread on me mm-hmm. strand of thinking. And I think in a way he may be – I don't see him being the nominee, but I think we're going to hear – if he runs, he'll make a lot of noise.
You know, David, you get a sense, and you've alluded to this, that Republicans are going to struggle to get behind anybody as their standard bearer here. The Tea Party won't be happy, or social conservatives won't be happy, or the moderates won't be happy. That's a pretty tough nut for them to crack, isn't it, going forward?
Yeah, it is, and it will remain a nut to crack until a candidate comes along and cracks it. I mean, the one thing I've learned from 30 years of being wrong about politics is that the thing that ruins a party's electoral prospects is success. Nothing fails like success. And the Republicans were very successful at presidential politics for years, and it split up the party. The Democrats, everything we're saying about the Republicans' failure to get themselves together, we were saying about the Democrats 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. David, the U.S. Supreme Court just took another bite out of the campaign donation limit apple in this country by striking down an aggregate individual donation limit. You know, people bemoan the influence of money in our system. What does this ruling do to that? Is it as big a deal as some folks say it is?
Well, I'm kind of not kosher on the issue of campaign finance. In 1976, there was a landmark case, Buckley versus Vallejo.
Yeah.
And it was not terribly controversial on the court. It was a clear ruling, and it said that people are free to spend as much money as they want in politics. Now, folks in both parties have been trying ever since then to figure out legal ways to limit the amount of spending in politics, and they keep going to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court keeps saying, no, really, you can't limit the amount of money people can spend on politics. I would like that. I think that fight's over. I think what we have that would be a great tool is with the Internet, we have the possibility of instant disclosure requirements that the moment the money is mm-hmm. is donated and spent, the whole country potentially can know who spent it. So I'd much rather see us crack down on secret spending than on try to say, well, you can spend X, but you can't spend Y.
But in the meantime, Carl Cannon, a lot of folks are saying that money is ruining politics, is the poison pill of American politics. Do you think it is?
Well, I guess I'm more aligned with David, who What's Jess Unruh's great line? Money is the mother's milk of politics. Yeah. He said, mother's milk is not poisonous. So,
or Phil Grimm, I've got the best friend you can have in politics, and that's ready money. And I was down there when he said it, and the whole press corps went, did he say that? Is that really what he said?
Well, look, but the point is that it's almost a boring thing to talk about, because the two parties, the hypocrisy is, you're going to have to come up with a new word. The Democrats, what they're doing now is taking money from a billionaire named George Soros to run attack ads on the Republicans for taking money from the billionaire, the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of tired of it. Okay, how about this, guys? Spend your money telling us how you're going to lower this unemployment rate. Oh. In other words, Steve, if they spent the money a little better, I don't think we'd care.
Yeah. We've been talking for much of this hour about 2016. Let's move the calendar a little closer within range here. 2014 midterm elections, a lot of talk Republicans might retake the U.S. Senate and control of that chamber this year. Carl, how do you see it shaking out?
Well, there's 36 seats up this time because you have a couple special elections, South Carolina and Oklahoma. The Democrats have more seats up and more vulnerable seats, and the Democrats to hold on really have to – they have to – the Republicans need 6 seats to take it over, and you can rattle off 10 they could get. So I think it's a tough year for the Democrats, and I think they think it. I know the president thinks it. He's raising money like crazy. He's raising money today in Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's a second-term president. He can't run again. He's not doing it for himself. He's doing it to try and protect the Senate. They're worried. The Democrats are very worried the Senate's going to go. Although, in full disclosure, I just say I have a bias here like every journalist. I, of course, hope that it's 50-50 when it's over, because then Joe Biden can preside over the Senate, and that's its own reward.
Its own entertainment value right there. Yeah, exactly. David, do you see Republicans taking it over? Maybe the bigger question is, Republicans already control the House. Would it make that much difference if the Republicans took over the Senate too?
Yes, because then bills will be going to the president and he'll have to veto them. And presidents don't like to have to veto bills, because then their position becomes the defining position. It's much better for him to have Harry Reid be the bad guy stopping the popular legislation that's being passed by the House Republicans, and they can pass any difficult bill. They send it to Reid. Reid seems perfectly happy to be the bad guy. He seems to have that personality. And that protects the president. And if he's down to his last veto pen, then that is a different dynamic.
You know, Carl, you get a sense, turning to the president himself, that after 5 years of his presidency, that he's just a mighty frustrated man. You know, he's frustrated with the politics on Capitol Hill, with all the relationship building that's required of the job that he doesn't seem to enjoy doing that much. Am I seeing that right?
I don't want to be too critical, but he doesn't seem to have fully read the job description before he applied for it. Politics is part of the job. And I mentioned that the president's in Texas. He's speaking tomorrow at the Lyndon Johnson Library about the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act. But what you start to when you start to remember how Lyndon Johnson got that law through, you realize the contrast between that Democratic president and this one, twisting arms and cajoling people, and it's harder to threaten people now, but it's not harder to schmooze them. There's all kinds of things that a president can do that this president he doesn't even act like he knows about them.
Yeah, yeah, just doesn't want to do it. David, you see it that way?
I do. It's been a while since we've had a second-term president who radiates distaste for the job. Usually. We've had one or two first-termers, one-termers who felt that way. I never felt like Jimmy Carter liked the job. But here this guy's two-term president, first Democrat to win the majority twice since Roosevelt. I mean, he's good at vote getting. You know, you think he's love politics, but he doesn't seem to like the inside game at all.
Yeah. I want to thank David Vondrely and Real Clear Politics, Carl Cannon, for coming in tonight. Again, you can see them at 6:30 tonight at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library downtown.